This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle. Toni began her talk by saying that a lot has happened in the last 11 months since she appeared at the City Club. Most important, she felt the governor of Illinois has all but advocated his public policy duties, and people in Cook County and elsewhere are in fear of being deported, of not having medical care insurance, and of being shot. Toni then went into a spirited defense of her soda tax, which is coming up for a vote at the full county board meeting today. She said it was imposed for health care reasons and not to raise revenue. However, 46% of the Cook County's budget is health care and 41% is for health care. That's 87%, only 13% for other areas. 25% of Cook County is Hispanic, 25% African American, 50% of Cook County is white. She has said that we need to increase our efforts in criminal justice reform, and she will continue to stand by the soda tax. She says she will oppose the vote to repeal, and her goal is to have a healthier, more efficient, safer community in Cook County. She also announced that she has plans for the next 5 years. So, in effect, she announced that she is a candidate for re-election for the presidency of the Cook County Board. When asked about Mr. Bloomberg's contributions, she said, in the interest of health care, we have to take our support where we can get it.
Good morning. Good morning. I want to thank Jay for that kind introduction, and I want to thank the City Club for the opportunity it presents to share information from elected officials like me and from other civic leaders. I usually say politics is public education, and surely the City Club is engaged in public education as well. So thank you, Jay, and to all the board members who are here today for your good work. I appreciate it. I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge all of my staff members who are here. If you would stand, please. I'm very grateful for your help and support. I also want to acknowledge again, I'm not sure that we acknowledged Hill Hammack, who's chair of the board of our health and hospital system. I want to acknowledge John Rogers, who's head of our Council of Economic Advisors. I really appreciate your good work, John. Thank you. Howard Mayles, who's head of our Economic Development Advisory Council. Thank you, too, Howard. And last but not least, I want to acknowledge Dan Cronin. Dan is a friend and colleague. We've worked closely together on a regional economic development initiative that began, I think, in December of 2013. Is that right, Dan? Did we get that right? We could not have done it without the good work of all of our colleagues, but especially Dan Cronin in DuPage County. And I'm very grateful to him. This is an important effort to try to get all of the political, the economic development business leaders in our region to collaborate to lift the entire region of northeastern Illinois. Thank you, Dan. I'm very grateful. So a lot has happened in the 11 months since I visited the City Club last. America elected Donald Trump, our president. The governor of Illinois has all but abdicated his core policymaking duties. And local leaders like me and like Dan find ourselves carrying much of the governing burden while also facing criticism of an electorate manipulated largely by one party to hate government, even as it provides them with vital benefits and services. People are living in fear across the country and across Cook County. Fear of deportation. Fear of losing their health insurance. Fear of being shot because of the color of their skin or being in the wrong place at the wrong time. 2017 has been a difficult year, and now more than ever, I find myself looking for the light, asking the question, who are we? Who are we as Americans? Who are we as a community here in Cook County? And who are we as political leaders navigating a new era when faith in government institutions has never been lower and the need for effective and compassionate government has never been greater? As you know, the last few weeks and months have been difficult for me politically, with a well-financed lobby, the beverage industry, spending millions of dollars against a tax I fought for, one that is supported universally by public health advocates. Rather than discourage me, this fight has refocused me and challenged me to better articulate my core beliefs about who we are in Cook County and what Cook County government does. So today I'd like to reflect on this political moment, to restate my values as a leader and vigorously defend the work and purpose of Cook County government, which is more important now than ever before. Because as Republicans in Washington and Springfield continue their systematic assault on the social safety net, our role in providing a critical backstop for our most vulnerable residents is essential and worth every penny. I believe we have a moral and fiscal obligation to make sure that all of our residents have access to health insurance and quality health care. I believe that young people in this country have been let down by government in many ways, like being used as political pawns in a cynical fight over public school funding, for example. These young people deserve a fair and equitable shake in our criminal justice system so they can make a more promising, productive future for themselves. Investing in communities isn't just about lifting up the people who live there. It's about lifting up the whole county and region, because our economic successes are deeply intertwined. The most successful regions in this country have the least inequality among their residents. When individuals are underutilized or whole communities are written off, our county is weaker and our economic potential is diminished. We've let government become a bad word. We've let people who say we should run government like a business use that as a cover for divesting from the social safety net. These people believe it makes economic sense to allow people to fall into financial hardship because one illness bankrupts them, or because they can't afford bail on a minor charge that keeps them in jail when they needn't be. Well, guess what? We've seen where this run government as a business approach takes us when we actually put businessmen in charge. Businessmen like Governor Bruce Rauner or President Donald Trump. It seemed to me that both of these men have been surprised, although to different degrees, to discover that good governance takes hard work, negotiation, and compromise. Good governance also means considering the whole as opposed to the most privileged parts, special interests whose voices are loudest because their wallets speak for them. I've watched in horror, although not shock, as President Trump and his top messengers have attacked the fundamental values of our nation by legitimizing white supremacists, vilifying immigrants, trivializing suffering, attacking our health care system, denying climate change, dismantling civil rights gains and voting protections, and last but not least, questioning the morals of Chicagoans. Because it's easier to defame us than to address the complex social and political history that contributes to our challenges. Meanwhile, in Illinois, the governor forced the legislature to override a veto to end a 736-day budget standoff that jeopardized our state's fiscal solvency, threatened our public education system, especially our higher education institutions. This unprecedented, needless obstruction jammed leaders like me and places like Cook County, which had to budget around the shortfalls we knew we'd face because the governor refused to do his job and make tough choices necessary to fund our state government. It's against this political backdrop that I'm especially proud of what we've been able to accomplish in 7 years. While the state went 736 days without a budget, Cook County has passed a balanced budget each of the 7 years of my tenure. We closed $1.8 billion in budget gaps. Let me repeat that. $1.8 billion. While responsibly shrinking our workforce by 10%. Additionally, with the help of the expanded insured population created by the Affordable Care Act, we've not only improved health care delivery, but we've also reduced the taxpayer allocation to the Cook County Health and Hospital System by $300 million on an annual basis. That's down 75% from the $400 million taxpayer allocation when I took office in 2010. President Trump says he's waiting for Obamacare to fail. While Cook County is a national leader in making the Affordable Care Act succeed, of the 350,000 new Medicaid patients in Cook County, 140,000 of them get their care through Cook County's managed care program, County Care. Additionally, our system provides 45%, almost half, of all the charity care in the county. 45% of all the charity care, even though our hospitals are only a few of the 72 hospitals located within Cook County. These numbers are significant, but they don't tell the whole story of our success as well as our patients do. We know from our health and hospital system stories of patients whose lives are being transformed by the services we provide. I'm going to give you a couple examples. Margot, a county care member, was the victim of domestic violence and found herself uninsured when she left her husband. Through the advice of her advocate at the Chicago Department of Family and Support Services, she applied for county care. Psychiatrists at Heartland Health Outreach identified and treated Margot's post-traumatic stress disorder and suicidal tendencies, prescribing medication and intensive therapy to get her life back on track. Then, as a result of finally having health insurance, Margot consulted a dermatologist for spots on her face that had worried her for months. They were precancerous. Through her county care coverage, she received 10 weeks of topical chemotherapy that eradicated her skin cancer growth cells. Margot often says, when people talk about the difference between life and death as it relates to Medicaid coverage, I'm living proof. Another county care member, Mary Jo from the South Suburbs, says her neighbors were shocked to learn that she was on Medicaid because despite the political caricature of Medicaid patients, they're not defined by geography, race, or gender. They're often our neighbors. Mary Jo suffered from chronic pain and through a process of applying for disability was able to maintain the continuity of coverage and care through Cook County. She tells her neighbors that without the intervention of doctors at Stroger Hospital, she might be dead. These stories are important because the Cook County Health and Hospital System is not only about providing top-notch health care at our hospitals, although we do that. Stroger this year was reclassified as a level one trauma center and recognized by U.S. News and World Report as a high-performing cardiac hospital. Cook County Hospital is also the standard bearer in improving care and care coordination, investing in community health, and pursuing innovative partnerships with nonprofits and community groups so that our residents are healthier. Just last week, I visited the Jorge Prieto Family Health Center in Little Village, one of 11 county health clinics that are regularly visited by a fresh food truck run through a partnership between our healthcare system and the Greater Chicago Food Depository. At these visits, our patients, who are identified by us as food insecure, receive 20 to 25 pounds of fresh produce. The Food Depository has said this screening process is vital in transforming the health of county residents. Through June of 2017, we've distributed almost 140,000 pounds of fresh produce to more than 5,000 families. Our health and hospital system also has launched a medical legal partnership, again, through screening our county care and system patients for various insecurities, including housing and food. The county then connects these patients with lawyers at the Legal Assistance Foundation, LAF, who can help them secure civic legal aid or benefits such as Medicaid, admittance to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, housing assistance, as well as assistance with income, employment, or immigration issues. I mention these two programs because they contribute to the idea that if we are good stewards of public health, our work moves outside hospitals and into communities. I read a piece last month in Health Affairs magazine by two former leaders of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services who outlined the need for local public health officials to view public health initiatives as critical infrastructure. Just as we talk about our nation's crumbling roads and bridges, they wrote, we need to maintain the natural and historic bridge between health care and the community by linking health systems with organizations focused on health-linked social factors. Everyone sees potholes in the road and wants them filled. Just because we can't see food insecurity that leads to obesity, diabetes, and heart disease doesn't mean we shouldn't invest in public health programs to make our communities stronger. I was especially interested to read that these two doctors and policy leaders suggested that a potential funding mechanism for a nationwide investment in public health could be a national tax on sweetened beverages, citing the role of federal taxes on tobacco in funding Medicaid's Children's Health Insurance Program, widely known as CHIP. As we think about how the county provides a critical safety net for our most vulnerable residents, I would be remiss if I did not mention our progress and leadership in criminal justice reform. I've often said that the county jail lies at the intersection of racism and poverty, that to consider who and how and why people, especially young people of color, end up in jail helps us reflect on our larger failings as a society. I was proud to stand with juvenile justice advocates and members of the Illinois House last week as we celebrated the signing of a law on expungement for juvenile records that we'd worked hard for. This juvenile expungement law is the fourth landmark win for us in helping young people get second chances they need to go on and live more productive adult lives. In 2014, we supported a law that raised the age of jurisdiction to include 17-year-olds charged with felonies. Previously, the age had been 16. In 2015, we fought for reforming the automatic transfer law that has reduced the number of young people being sent to adult court by 73%. And let me just say, our adult courts focus on punishment. Our juvenile courts focus on rehabilitation. So as many young people we can keep in the juvenile system as possible, the better off we are. And in 2016, we advocated for and won the end of mandatory 5-year probation for juveniles. To finish my remarks today, I'd like to tackle a few more contentious points I know you're all wondering about. I've fielded plenty of media questions lately, and I'm sure I will after this speech too, about whether or not I think the Board of Commissioners will vote to repeal the sweetened beverage tax, perhaps as soon as this afternoon. I reject the framing of the question. In my view, this isn't a vote to repeal or keep a revenue source we already approved. It's about whether or not we want Cook County to be healthier, safer, and more efficient, or if we're willing to go backwards and let Cook County be sicker, less safe, and less efficient. To any commissioner considering this action, I remind you that a vote to repeal is a vote to fire frontline health care providers, doctors, nurses, and other health care professionals who help serve our most vulnerable patients. A vote to repeal is a vote to halt plans for a new lifestyle center at Provident Hospital, where I was yesterday. This center is designed to promote better health outcomes for our patients while also saving us money in the long term, because treating acute and chronic illnesses is much more expensive than preventing them. A vote to repeal is a vote to compromise our constitutional duty to provide for the legal defense of those who cannot afford counsel by taking away money from the public defender's office and forcing our already overworked public defenders to absorb another 6,400 cases. A vote to repeal is a vote to reduce our community investments, especially in workforce development training programs geared at young people on the South and West sides. Our Cook County programs like Career Launch, Opportunity Works, and the Conservation Corps Together have helped us connect hundreds of Cook County young people between the ages of 16 and 24 to employment training and jobs. In my view, the choice is simple. I will choose to protect our safety net and essential services every time. My sincere hope is that our commissioners will do the same. But I understand and empathize with the immense pressure commissioners face as a result of the coordinated and expensive campaign that the soda industry is running against us. I'd like to leave you, however, with one last thought on Big Soda as they make their push to repeal this tax. I've been thinking a lot about what Michelle Obama said earlier this year about the Trump administration rolling back the healthy lunch program she implemented as First Lady. She said, "Think about why someone is okay with your kids eating crap. Why would you celebrate that? Why would you sit idly and be okay with that? Because here's the secret. If somebody is doing that, they don't care about your kid. So why is Big Soda okay with selling vulnerable kids liquid sugar, which we know is bad for them? The answer, of course, is because it's their business. The only reason this tax is disproportionately appears to affect poor communities is because Big Soda has spent decades preying on them. The soda industry doesn't care about public health in these communities. It's just about using them as pawns in a losing fight to maintain revenue. I have to acknowledge that it's hard to take the long view on the public's interest when faced with short-term political discomfort. But I'm not afraid to stand up for what I believe is right. And I'm not afraid to stand before you today and remind you why I'm here. I didn't run for this job because it was glamorous. I ran for this job because it's important and because it focuses on things I care about, principally the quality of health care we can deliver to the under and uninsured and the effectiveness and equity of our criminal justice system. I didn't pick this job because there was some kind of aura attached to it or because I viewed this as a stepping stone to another office. I picked it because I knew that I could make a difference, because I'm willing to work hard, because I've worked to build a great team that can help us make the county more effective. And I think that after a very long period where people didn't have confidence in county government, when they thought it was a patronage backwater, we've brought back respectability to the county and dramatically improved the quality of services we deliver. And I'm proud of that. And I'm going to try to do my best over the next 5 years to implement the changes that we started in 2010. That's my goal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, President Winkle. We now have time for questions. So if anybody has a question, if you've written it out, just hold it up in the air, and our staff will come by and pick them up. Whoa.
Can't be there are no questions. It can't possibly.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I'll throw out a question at you, okay?
All right. Go ahead.
You talked about Big Soda and the amount of money they've invested in trying to get a repeal. Would you care to comment on the involvement of the former mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, in this issue?
I'd be happy to. First of all, I'm very grateful to Mayor Bloomberg. I don't personally have the resources to fight Big Soda, and so we're very grateful for his help. Across the country, he's made two issues, gun control, reasonable gun control laws, and sweetened beverage taxes, the issues that he has focused attention on and been willing to spend resources on, and I'm very grateful that he's engaged in the battle here in Cook County.
Okay, thank you. This is from Alderman Brian Hopkins of the 2nd Ward. Alderman, where are you? He just left. Of course. Leaves the question and he bugs out and he's my alderman. How about that? Oh, okay. Thank you. The question is, when did the county last increase its property tax levy? Are you aware of any other unit of government that has gone that long without an increase?
Well, I think our residents in Cook County are a little confused sometimes because they see their property tax bills rise and they think that the county has increased its tax levy, when in fact the county, Cook County government, has not increased its tax levy since the mid-90s. So it's been more than 20 years since Cook County raised its property tax levy. In that interval, of course, the city of Chicago, other cities, towns, and villages, and especially school districts, have raised their property tax levies, and people have seen their property tax bills rise. But in the case of Cook County government, it's more than 20 years since we last raised property taxes.
Thank you. This is from Julia Ellis, who's with Ellis Strategies, LLC. Madam President, you've talked about reforms of Cook County that led to a 10% decrease in the size of county government supporting the sales tax. Confusing question. Was repealed. How? I don't understand her question. Oh. Mea culpa. That led to a 10% decrease in the size of county government. Supposing the soda tax was repealed, how might the resulting cut compare in size and scope?
We faced a gap last year of about $174 million, and that's the reason that we proposed increasing revenue, and we chose a revenue source that we thought had positive health benefits as well. I'll give the example that Dr. Jay Shannon usually gives. In the 1960s, 42% of adults smoked, 42%, and the research, the health research, got more and more compelling about how bad smoking was for you. As a result, we applied taxes to cigarettes at the state level, at the federal level, at the city and county level. We ran a public education campaign about how bad smoking was, and we restricted the places people could smoke. So 42% in the 1960s, 50 years later, 19% of adults smoke. And it's not so much that adults stopped smoking is that young people didn't start smoking because cigarettes were so expensive. So there were very positive health benefits. Cuts of $200 million in our budget would be pretty devastating. It'd be laying off doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals, state's attorneys and public defenders, jail guards. Almost all of our money is spent on personnel. And so when we take cuts in our budget, it means that we have to let staff go, and that means that programs and services suffer. So I can't tell you exactly how many people would be laid off. I know that last year when we looked at this, we were looking at 1,100 layoffs. It would be more this year, and frankly, without revenue, every year into the foreseeable future, it's more layoffs. And that means quite clearly programs and services are reduced, diminished, eliminated.
Thank you. Makes it a lot easier when you have your glasses. Thanks, Mr. President. I appreciate that. President Preckwinkle, looking back at when you and your staff first considered adopting the tax on drinks and that, did you anticipate the kind of pushback that we are currently seeing?
I think an honest answer to that is no. It's quite clear to me that sweetened beverages are not good for you. Apparently, it's not clear to everybody. And so we have some work to do, not only about sweetened beverages and their impact on your health. By the way, yesterday when we were at Provident Hospital, at the closure of our press conference, A young woman in the back raised her hand and said she'd like to say a few words. She was a resident at Stroger Hospital, a pediatric resident, and she said she wanted to share that half the young people that she treats struggle with weight, with obesity. And she tells them, she said, this very diminutive person, you know, you've got to stop drinking sweetened beverages. That's where a lot of these empty calories come from. And we all know in many of our black and brown neighborhoods, the kids stop and get, you know, blue juice on the way to school, or those, what do you call them, those chip things. Pardon me? Yes, okay. Flaming Hots, that's it. My grandkids love them too, what can I tell you? Flaming Hots, right? Blue juice and Flaming Hots for breakfast, you know. It's cheap, but neither of them are good for you. And we have some real challenges in sharing with people the impacts of sweetened beverage consumption, the impacts for obesity and diabetes and tooth decay and heart disease, and at the same time sharing with them what the revenue goes for. What is it the county does? 46% of our budget is health care, 41% of our budget is criminal justice. So 87% of our dollars go into those two buckets. And we have to make the case for ourselves about the good work that we're doing in health care and the efforts that we're making around criminal justice reform, which impacts heavily, disproportionately, the same African American and Latino communities that are targeted by Big Soda.
Thank you. With regard to criminal justice reform, where do you, the state's attorney, and Sheriff Dart see the next pushes for reform in the system?
Well, our strategy is twofold. As I said earlier, we've been working hard in Springfield, and I have to credit my former chief of staff, now state's attorney Kim Fox, for that. When she came on board, she said, we've got to have a more robust presence and agenda in Springfield around criminal justice activity. We're working on it here internally, but we've got to change the laws in the state. And I cited four initiatives that have been successful in the last 4 years in Springfield, reducing the number of young people transferred to adult court, keeping younger people in the juvenile justice system, that is raising the age, rather than sending them to adult court, eliminating mandatory 5-year probation, and then the most recent success, automatic expungements, you know, for arrests in which there's no conviction for minor crimes. Now, those are all great things for our young people. I have to say, though, that we have not had the same level of success in the reform efforts that have been directed to adults. There's much more empathy and bipartisan willingness to deal with the challenges that young people face who are involved in the criminal justice system than adults who are involved in the criminal justice system. So what are we going to do? We're going to continue to work in Springfield, and we're going to continue to work together here at home. And I have to say that the chief judge, Tim Evans, the sheriff, Tom Dart, the state's attorney, Kim Fox, the clerk of the court, Dorothy Brown, the public defender, Amy Campanelli, with my staff and the Justice Advisory Council, I'm deeply grateful to them, have been working together for a very long time. And we've had some substantial success, made some real progress. We've reduced the jail population by 25%, basically by helping those who are accused of nonviolent crimes spend the time between their arrest and the disposition of their case out in the community so they can work and support their families or go to school or whatever. And we've made significant changes in bond court and are about to make more, bond court being the port of entry into the criminal justice system. So we've got an agenda in Springfield that we're pursuing, and as I said, we've been much more successful on the juvenile side than the adult side, and we're continuing to work together cooperatively with all the actors in the criminal justice system around internal reforms to make our system more fair and effective. But it is still true that black and brown communities are disproportionately impacted by our criminal justice system. Latinos are 25% of the county's population. African Americans are 25%. 86% of the people in our jail are black and brown. And although the city of Chicago is half the population of the county, 80% of the people in our jail are from the city of Chicago. So the hyper-policing of black and brown neighborhoods continues to be a challenge, and the profound racism that we struggle with in this country is never more apparent than in what happens in our criminal justice system.
Thank you. This is from Jerry Peck with the IMA. He's not a member of the City Club. Jerry, we expect you to become a member. $50. You can afford it. Okay. Why are artificially flavored beverages taxed if we are concerned about calories?
Well, it turns out that the research shows that not just sugar-sweetened beverages, but artificially sweetened beverages aren't good for you either. And we decided the simplest way to do this was to cover all sweetened beverages. And that's what we've done in implementing the tax thus far. What are excluded? Water, 100% fruit juice, formula, milk products. Better alternatives than sweetened beverages for people in terms of their health, and we think they were reasonable exemptions to our taxes.
Thank you. President, it appears that the original projections about what the amount of revenue that this, for want of a better term, soda tax would bring in were overinflated for a variety of reasons. If there is a significant shortfall, how do you propose to address that issue? Can we expect some new revenue proposals, perhaps a tax on baked goods and so on that would have sugar and be high in calories?
First of all, your premise is incorrect.
I'm glad.
You said the projections were overinflated. And the fact of the matter is we haven't gotten any revenue from this yet. We started the tax in August 2nd. The receipts aren't due until September 20th, so we'll have no idea how we're really doing until after September 20th. So to say that the revenue projections were overinflated on the basis of no evidence is pretty interesting. I'm sorry, this is kind of Alice in Wonderland, you know? We don't know how much money we've gotten, but the projections are overinflated. Let me just say, we based our projections on the experiences that Berkeley had, because Berkeley has had a sweetened beverage tax for the longest amount of time. So there are issues initially, there are bumps in the road, there are issues initially about compliance. You know, you have to work with people. So the first couple of months, it's always kind of, you know, bumpy. And then people kind of get into it. It's like any tax. It takes a while for people to fully comply. So we're not sure exactly how much money we're going to get. We'll see after September 20th, and then we'll make the appropriate adjustments. But, you know, this trope that we've overinflated our revenues is just garbage because we don't know what the revenues are yet.
Okay, thank you. You know, one of the things that we really appreciate at the City Club when President Preckwinkle comes is you can ask her any question and you will get an answer. So let's give her a big round of applause.